listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Remember, you can send us a text at 2057, email us, inbox at realitycheck.radio. Coming up, oh, we're so blessed. Dr. Sarah Farrant, good morning, Sarah.
Morning, Rodney, and morning to our listeners.
Oh, they love you, Sarah.
Thanks, Rodney.
They really do. They really do. Now, the first thing you said you wanted to clear up was this whole Marmite thing. Is Marmite good, bad, indifferent?
Yeah, I thought that was a really interesting question that we got from a listener. And they had asked something about Marmite, whether Marmite's good for you and the vitamin Bs. And so, of course, whenever I'm looking at any particular product, Rodney, I always like to ask who owns the product. And the product is owned in New Zealand by a company called Sanitarium. And Sanitarium is owned by Seventh-day Adventists. And the same product, Marmite, is also sold in the UK. Same original recipe, but it's owned by a completely different company called Unilever. Now, if people have been following along with what's been happening around the world, people would be familiar with the company Unilever. And Unilever also does products like Dove and Domestos and Ben & Jerry's ice cream, Hellmann's, people might know that from mayonnaise that they make, Magnum ice creams, Rexona, Omo, Sunsilk, you know, they're a big brand. The second largest shareholder in Unilever is BlackRock. So we probably don't need to go down that road, but suffice to say, it's probably not a company that has your best interest or your health in mind. So we have these two companies that have the rights to the original recipe of Marmite. But back in, I think it was around 1908, Marmite New Zealand, or the Seventh-day Adventists, or Sanitarium New Zealand, actually asked for a change of the original recipe, and they wanted to add two extra ingredients. And the two ingredients that they added was sugar and caramel 3, which is a colouring. So then you've got to ask yourself the question, okay, so sugar and caramel has been added. Here's this company, Sanitarium, owned by the Seventh-day Adventists. Well, what does, you know, what's their logo? What's not their logo, sorry, what's their slogan? And Sanitarium, by definition alone, actually refers to a hospital for the treatment of chronic illness. That's interesting. And then you look at Sanitarium and you look at their website and what their catch cry is. And their catch cry is that they are a health and well-being company. In fact, I think their catch cry is the health food company. So then you've got to ask, well, that's really interesting. Sanitarium, by definition, means a hospital for the treatment of chronic illness. Sanitarium is making Marmite. They've added two extra ingredients, one being sugar and one being caramel 3. Sanitarium also does Weet-Bix. People would probably be familiar with that, which, you know, its highest ingredients are wheat and raw sugar. They also do Up and Go, which has sugar, flavors and canola oil in it, and they also do plant and nut-based milks under the brand of So Good, which also has sugar and canola oil in it. So I'm kind of sitting there scratching my head. Well, so far the whole picture of Sanitarium does not seem to have my health and well-being at the forefront of the products that they are delivering to the people of New Zealand. Anyway, so then I went digging and I thought, okay, I'll have a look at the ingredients of Marmite, because I always encourage people, Rodney, to make sure that they are looking at the ingredients of anything that they put into their body, not necessarily the label, not necessarily the carbs and the proteins and the sugars, etc., because the ingredients don't lie. You know, labels can lie at times, but the ingredients usually don't lie. So I went digging and looked at the Marmite original recipe. Now, the original recipe has, sorry, the original recipe from Sanitarium New Zealand. So with the added sugar and the caramel 3 in it. So the top ingredient is yeast, which is interesting. And the second ingredient, top ingredient, is sugar. Because when you're reading any ingredient label, the ingredients are always labeled according to what the most is, all the way down to what the least is. So we've got yeast as the first, then we've got sugar, and then we've got salt. We don't know where that's from. Then they've got a mineral salt. We don't know where that's from. And then we've got the coloring, caramel 3. And then you've got corn maltodextrin. Then you've got mineral iron. We don't know if that's actually from rock or whether it's actually from peat. And then you've got vitamins. Again, there's no information on the label as to whether that the vitamins are actually coming from nature or actually they are made in a laboratory. And then you've got spices. They don't label that. Then you've got herbs. And then they've got a processing aid which contains wheat. So for me, when I look at this, I see that there's a number of different challenges. Besides the B vitamins, it's pretty much laced with sugar and with yeast. So corn maltodextrin is a starch that then becomes a sugar under all of its seven steps of processing. And then we've got sugar itself as that second ingredient, and that would most likely, I would say, be a highly processed white sugar that they're using. Again, that goes through 7 to 8 steps to get to that bleached color of white. And then you've got the caramel 3 coloring, and that's been known in rat experiments to actually decrease the number of lymphocytes in their body. So all of a sudden, we've got this cocktail of ingredients within this product, besides the B vitamins or the minerals or the iron that they say that it's in there, that is not going to be healthy for the body. So when you essentially have a cocktail of sugar and yeast together, you're going to have an impact on your gut biome. So biome being the gut bacteria in your immune system, or 70% of your immune system is actually housed and regulated in your gut. So all of a sudden we're putting yeast into it, which is going to have an effect on our gut. And this is from the mouth all the way through to the anus. And then we're adding sugar to that. And all of a sudden that's going to have and create a yeast infection. And that yeast infection we would probably be calling Candida albicans. And the way that that may manifest in people's bodies is through thrush. You can have oral thrush, or you can have vaginal thrush. You can have tiredness and fatigue. You could have a urinary tract infection. You can have cramps, gas, bloating, joint discomfort or swelling or pain. So it's all of a sudden, here's this company that is saying that their slogan is the health food company, and yet the name of their company is saying that it, by definition, it's a hospital for the treatment of chronic illness, and that if you actually end up having this product in your diet consistently, then you're adding yeast and sugar, and that can end up with a chronic illness in something like Candida albicans. So for me, I wouldn't be touching Marmite at all. I don't. I never have. Alone, I certainly wouldn't be touching it. But it also decreases when you have an infection like Candida, then you have got and the proliferation of that, then you decrease your magnesium absorption, you decrease your iron, your zinc, your copper, your selenium, everything, all the minerals all of a sudden decreased in the ability of the body to uptake them for, you know, the benefit of your health. So, you know, I just think it's really interesting when you start to, you know, take a 10,000 foot view on things, and we look down and we go, okay, here's Marmite, here's its ingredients, here's the top ingredients. regardless of the other things in them, yeast and sugar are the top two ingredients, and that can create something like candida albicans. And if your bucket, Rodney, is already full in terms of if you already don't have a good diet, but you're thinking that, you know, because it's got B vitamins in it, it's going to be great. And you're unbeknownst to you putting all of this yeast and sugar into an already filled up bucket, decreased immune system in your body, then your body is going to create something like candida, and you will end up with something that's quite possibly chronic if we're not aware of that. So the very thing that the company is saying that espouses, the health food company, is actually putting you into what the name of the company actually represents, and that is into a chronic, possibly a chronic illness.
Because the history of Kellogg in the United States, that was it Colonel Kellogg or Mr. Kellogg? And he ran sanitariums, right, for people who were chronically sick. And then Seventh-day Adventist, I believe. I think I'm correct. And then developed the technique of using corn and then got to market it as this healthy breakfast food when it couldn't be more untrue.
Yeah. You know, there's more nutrition in the cardboard box it comes in than the actual corn in Kellogg's, that's for sure.
I think I'm going to have to – I've eaten Marmite my entire life. Mm. I keep my kids healthy with sourdough bread, but I put Marmite on it. I'm going to have to kill the Marmite. I don't know what I'm going to do instead of Marmite. You got a suggestion for something that's Marmite-like that I could swap the kids out with?
Yeah, you know, I don't, because I don't
need it.
It's not.
I'll just do their sourdough butter and cheese, and I'll just leave off the Marmite, and I'll wait for the screams. And say,
almond, you know, almond butter, homemade jams, you know, anything that's homemade that you know what has gone into the production of it is beneficial.
Well, isn't it scary how foolish you feel, right? Because you like to think you're awake to it, but I spend a bit of time on this, but at the end of the day, you're quite busy with kids and you just slash a bit of Marmite on and you're not thinking about it and you think, oh, the kids love it. Well, they love it because of the sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that. Oh, I feel foolish now. Oh, well, I'm going to have to work on that. I'll give you an update on my getting myself off my Marmite.
Yeah. I think, Rodney, it's that whole thing of, it's that blind side that we've had as we journey through our life over the last 100 years, and how if people want to put something destructive, then they'll put it right in front of your face and we don't see it. And it's not until we actually stop and ask ourselves different questions. I've always said the quality of our life is based on the quality of our questions, and that's no different for the quality of our health is based on the quality of the questions. So, you know, if our listeners take anything from this, it's about let's not trust blindly. Let's actually read the ingredients. And I always say to our kids, if you can't make that in the kitchen, then put it back on the shelf. It's not worth the money that it comes out of. Mm. So, and Marmite's no different. Vegemite's no different. I mean, any of those processed aisles within the supermarket are going to have an impact on our health. And I would say if people, after listening to our call, actually go to their pantry and look at all the things that I've got in there and actually look at the back of the label, then they will I'm sure they'll find some things that are like, oh gosh, I probably shouldn't be putting this into my body.
No.
Well,
there's me. And I'd say we eat pretty clean and pretty carefully, particularly with the kids.
Mm.
And I've fallen in a big trap. And the big alert should have been sanitarium.
Yeah,
if you make Weet-Bix and market that as health food, there's something seriously wrong.
Yeah. Well, do you know what the big thing is? It wasn't that long ago, maybe a couple of years ago now, we are just a family on the island, and their boys were big into rugby. They'd got some, scholarships and opportunities to go into league in Australia. And the mum sent me the brochure that they were given for nutrition. My jaw dropped in terms of what these kids were being told to eat. I literally almost fell off my chair. And I said to her, I said, you wouldn't have your kids touching any of the information in here, one of which was up and go, just grab an up and go in the morning and off you go. And, with flavors and colorings and sugar and canola oil, why would we have that in our body when we know that canola oil, made from the rapeseed plant, I think it is. It's genetically modified. It's a neurotoxin to the body. It's a brain, like it's just not healthy. And the challenge is that these companies have deep pockets and they market well.
It's amazing.
And that's one of the
And,
challenges.
well, here's a personal story. When I met my wife, she was a professional athlete, and she was also suffering chronic fatigue. So she would go through stages where she couldn't climb up a set of stairs. And by then I was really into figuring out health and diet and nutrition. And they had a sports nutritionist. Wow. Oh my God, what they were supposed to eat. It was horrific. This is 10 years ago, I guess, 12, no, 15 years ago. There was absolutely no nutrition in it. And like one egg in a week was a sort of indulgence because there was to be no fat. Anyway, we put her on a program to restore her biome, and she recovered remarkably. And of course, she'd had a double whammy because she'd been competing in India and had got bugs in there, and of course, had got her gut wrecked, and then no decent food. And she would sit there eating this stuff, thinking that she was doing the right thing. And of course, she's doing completely the wrong thing as far as you and I are concerned. And now she's very, very healthy. And she was following expert advice. Gosh,
And again, it's that whole indoctrination of a university or tertiary education program in dietetics or something like that. And I remember doing that. I did a year of dietetics at Deakin University back in the day. And I remember going and sitting the exam. And it had all of these options. For one was instance, basically it was margarine versus butter. And I had written all over the exam paper, butter is way better, butter is way better. Anyway, I got my exam paper back and there was red marks all over it. Like everything was incorrect. Margarine is better than the butter, et cetera, et cetera. And I had a stand-up argument with them and I left. I just said, I can't live this lie, and this is not the truth, and people deserve to know the truth. And if we're going to be looking after people's health, then health matters. It's not about flogging a product or flogging the new thing, the latest thing on the market. It's about carefully understanding and asking questions in order to, unveil the truth for yourself. And so, I left dietetics because I was so blind, what was I say? Dumbfounded would probably be a good word, dumbfounded by what they were actually teaching us. And that was, that's well over 24, 30 years ago that I was 30 or 32 years ago actually that I was doing that. And then recently, not recently, sorry, a number of years ago now, we took our kids on a trip up the coast of Australia, and we went into Canberra because I wanted to show them where I was living at the Australian Institute of Sport. So we did an Australian Institute of Sport experience where we could stay the night, and I showed them where my room was that I, used to live out of, etc. And we went to the dining hall. Well, the dining hall was different to when I was there, but they had all the names and the ingredients of all the food that was there, obviously for different, athletes now, and the awareness of, allergies and, microbiome and gluten and all that kind of stuff. Well, So much of the product, so much of the food there, sorry, had canola oil in it. Interestingly, I've left the restaurant with the kids and my husband, and as we were going out, there was an Australian rower walking in. She had her, Australian rowing top on, and I was like, "Oh, hi! Are you with the Australian rowing team?" And I used to be in that, and I lived here. And anyway, she and I got chatting. I said, "So, what are you a rower?" And she said, "No, I'm actually the nutritionist." And I was like, "Oh, wow!" I was like, "Perfect timing." Well, did I have a conversation with her? Like, and it's not like I let it rip, but I was so disgusted with what they were feeding our athletes. I was surprised that they could still perform and they could still achieve records. And I thought, unfortunately, the body, because it's young and still youthful, is
Yes.
not going to bear the brunt
Yes.
of that for another 20 years. And I thought that's the sad part about it, that these athletes are so focused and so driven to achieve that they're not stopping to ask questions. Will this nourish my body? Will this help me perform? And,
And of course, those athletes that did take the diet and weren't, what's the word, that it did affect them, they just drop out. They just don't make it. And so you're left with the athletes that can actually perform on a rubbish diet.
I find
How long
it,
ago was that, Sarah?
Poor. So I would say it would have been about 10 years ago.
Do you think it's changed?
Nope, not at all. I could probably
Because
quite confidently say that.
there's a huge lag, isn't there, in this nutrition, because a lecturer will be lecturing for 30, 40 years. They're not going to change their mind. And so there's this huge institutional inertia, and you have these bright young things turn up to university, and their professors teach the professors too often teach it as a gospel. And it's peer review, or this is peer reviewed, all the rest of it. And it is industry propaganda. And what I notice with these graduates is when you ask them why, like, why is margarine better than butter? It just is. Oh, my professors taught me. Oh, this is what I learned at university. But they don't have actual explanation. I guarantee you found that with that nutritionist.
And just the inability to think for
Critical.
yourself, when you're so, ingrained, indoctrinated, and you go through a whole process where you're not taught to think, not taught to critically think, or you don't know how to think. You just because it's all about spoon feeding and regurgitation. And
Well, here's a funny thing. Isn't it peculiar? That you need to go to university or have and have a professor teach you what to eat. Because, like, you should know what to eat, right? I mean, we've survived for as humans for a couple of hundred thousand years without having degrees in nutrition. In fact, it's a funny thought, isn't it? The
Well, it
decline
is,
in
and
that The decline in our health correlates the rise of nutrition as a science.
And it, and it still hasn't, it still hasn't changed today. The athletes that we adjust through the practice, and then New Zealand level athletes all the way through to age grade athletes, and they still bring us information. We're like, just don't touch it. Just go back
Right.
to your basics of good food, good nutrition, that you
Good
know where it
sleep.
comes from. It's not out of a packet. It's not out of a box. It's it doesn't have this, and this added to it. That will be your greatest natural weapon against all of these other athletes. Let them sink and let them, spike and drop. But you, no. Let's, So it's, yeah, it's,
Goodness me.
it's interesting.
Well, it's winter,
It
coughs and
is.
colds.
It's
What's a
freezing.
You're not freezing there. We might.
I am. It's been 2 degrees
You're frozen.
here, Rodney. It feels like there's
What is
snow
it?
still outside.
What is it?
2 degrees.
Well, this morning I'm down here in Queenstown. It was minus five.
Well, then I feel very grateful that I'm at two.
And I ran the kids up. Oh, don't tell me. Ran the kids up for some skiing, a couple of them. And it was just stunning. And, of course, not many people there because the holidays haven't started. They're going to have a ball.
Oh, that's
funny
awesome.
Enough, I was talking to one of the coaches, and he's Canadian, and he skied coaching in Lake Louise in Canada.
Oh, yeah.
Over our summer, and he said it hit minus 55 Celsius.
Holy moly, that's freezing. I've been in minus 25 when we were living in the US, but not much.
And I said, you were skiing and the chairlifts were working? He said, yes. He said, but we were the only ones out skiing.
Wow.
And he said it was fantastic because no one else was on this huge mountain run. And he said, as long as you kept your skin covered, you know, you're okay.
Yeah.
But he said, you wouldn't want to be out there on your own.
Ooh, that's cold.
I've had minus 40 in Montana. I lived in Montana for a year. And it used to be regularly minus 25, and then minus 40, they'd shut the university because you just couldn't go out in it. Okay, coughs and colds, what do you do? What's the theory?
So, speaking
about
of
this?
Winter, a while ago, I wrote this blog called To Sneeze, Blow, or Plug Your Nose. And I thought it might be great just to share some snippets out of that with regards to, you know, our audience. We're kind of in that peak of winter. But I thought it was really interesting. I wrote it because, Rodney, I had seen a mum and dad, and we've seen them many times, right? A mum placed a hanky over her young child and was telling the child to blow, one, two, three, blow. And the child was finding it extremely difficult to blow. And I sat there observing this, you know, interaction, and I just went, isn't it interesting that our sneeze, our ability to sneeze, is an innate response to something. It's the innate intelligence of the body saying, you know what, something's in there and we've got to get it out, and we're going to get it out in the fastest way possible, so we'll sneeze. Whereas blowing the nose is actually a learned behavior. It's not something innately that we do. You don't see a child going to get a tissue to blow their nose. You'll only see that when a parent has actually taught them that behavior. It's not something that's innate to do. So when we sneeze, the body recognizes that there's something in there that needs to go out. But the sneeze is actually expelling the debris, which is all, you know, like the particles of dust, etc. It's expelling it out of the nose at the speed of about 160 kilometers an hour.
Whoa.
Now, that's fast. And when we blow our nose, we're actually only expelling what's in the nose at around 64 kilometers an hour. So that's a difference of around 100 kilometers, let's say. So when we blow our nose, we have debris that comes out of the nose, but we also, because of the lack of speed associated with it, force debris back and upwards into our nose. So it defeats the purpose of what the body is trying to do. And again, remember, this is a learned behavior. It's not something innate like the sneeze. So then you've got to ask yourself, well, is blowing your nose actually beneficial for you or not? And given that we have debris that's going backwards and upwards into the nasal passageway, the answer to that would be no. So there's three different ways I suggest that we can combat this, you know, this need of a dripping nose or wanting to remove the debris that's in the nose other than via a sneeze. And we had this, I'll go here first and tell you this story. We had a professor, a chiropractor, when we were studying at college, and his name was Dr. Fred Barge. It was an absolute gentleman and an extraordinary lecturer in terms of the ability to look at the wisdom of the body. And he'd walk into class and he'd have adorning his, you know, big hat and his cravat and a cane in his left hand, and he'd, you know, stamp the cane down. He'd go, "Morning, fledgling chiropractors." And then he'd say, you know, "This morning we're going to talk about yada, yada, yada." Well, on this day, we were talking about just this. We were talking about the sneeze and the blowing of the nose. And he spoke about how the debris, when we blow the nose, gets back into the nasal passageways. And he said, the best thing that you can do is actually get a tissue, twirl it around so it will fit up your nose, and leave it there for 3 days, changing as you need to change it, but leaving it there for 3 days. And within 3 days, you won't have that dripping nose or that running nose or that cold. So I found it really interesting. So I obviously would go and test that. And sure enough, I found that that worked. And also, you know, the people and friends and family that we would share this with, they also found that it would work. So there's three ways that we can do this. You can blow your nose really, really slowly. So we're not forcing the debris back and upward into the nasal passage. Just very, very lightly blow the nose. And then the second way is that if you do have drips, just wipe your nose. There's no need to blow it. Just wipe the drips away. And then the third thing is to do what Dr. Fred Barge said, is to twirl some tissue and put it up your nose and keep it up there for 3 days. So it's I don't think people have necessarily seen or, you know, again, taken that 10,000 foot view and looked down and gone, actually, blowing your nose isn't an innate response. It is a learnt behavior. Whereas sneezing, at the speed that comes out, there's nothing that is going back into the nasal passage. It's just going forward.
I've got a terrible admission. I have never blown my nose in my life.
Well, that's probably a good thing.
My mother used to try and teach me how to blow my nose as a little boy, and I absolutely hated it, and I couldn't do it, and I still can't. This is something I just can't blow my nose.
So here's the question. Have you taught your kids to blow their nose?
No.
Yeah, great. That's fantastic.
Never occurred to me. I've never blown my nose.
Yeah.
I've never stuck anything up my nose either. But tell me, handkerchiefs used to be a thing. So what we used to have as kids, and I always did this because this was manners, is that when you sneezed, you'd pull your handkerchief out of your pocket and cover your mouth and nose and sneeze into your handkerchief.
Yeah.
Is that a good thing?
I think that's just probably more of a polite thing to do. You know, we're not putting our, you know, snot, pardon the crassness of the word, but, you know, we're not putting that out there if you're in a social setting. But as long as you allow the sneeze to come, you know, some people would go to sneeze and they would block their nose.
Yeah.
You know, they'd pinch the nose and and it wouldn't come out. That's but not ideally, what I suggest that you do.
Ideally, you stand in an open paddock and go for it.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. The kids now are all taught, no one takes a handkerchief to school, and they're all taught to sneeze into their elbow.
Mm.
I find that odd.
Yeah.
It looks to me, what's the word? Like, you're sneezing into your goodness elbow. At least with a handkerchief, your mum would give you a clean one every day. But they're not going to change their sweater every day. So they're going in and they're sneezing into their sweater and then, you know, carrying on as though, oh, yeah, I got rid of all the bugs. No, they're just sitting. Isn't that true? Why would you sneeze? I mean, I understand the logic of not having it blow around the classroom in the ear, but you're not helping matters by sneezing particularly into your elbow compared to what we did as kids, sneeze into a handkerchief, which I would do, and then fold your handkerchief and put it in your pocket and get a clean one the next day. I don't know. It's well, a funny I think
that's
thing,
probably,
isn't it?
That's probably more of an etiquette thing. Like, I'm not a germ theorist, so I'm not, you know, I don't have anything to be
You're
afraid
a
of if
terrain
someone
person.
sneezes in front of me. You know, like, it doesn't worry me at all. But,
You're a terrain person, right?
Well, yeah. Yeah, if you want
So
to look at it like that, yeah.
the germs aren't the problem. The problem is your body being able to handle the germ.
Yeah. The nose is amazing. It's exceptionally complex, but it's also exceptionally elegant. And you know, given that our immunity starts within our mouth, that it starts with our nose, we have great protection. We have the Ring of Fire, what's called the Ring of Fire, at least we called it when we were going through college, the Ring of Fire, when I was working in cadaver lab for 2.5 years. And looking innately and internally at the extraordinary makeup of the body, then there's this Ring of Fire that sits at the back of the throat, and that's where we, start to create a lot of the immunity before it goes down. So sneezing is not a big deal, but it's important, that I think that's the emphasis for me is like, don't pinch your nose when you want to sneeze. Make sure that you are sneezing. If you're going to blow your nose, do it really slowly. Better still, just wipe the drips away. I remember my mum, Rodney, probably similar to you, she'd carry a hanky, but I never ever saw her blow a nose. When I think about it now,
No,
I always saw her
actually, it's
wipe a
funny.
nose. You know,
My
and same
mother
with my
knew.
dad. You know, I would actually see him blow a couple of times, but I would see him more often wipe his nose, not blow it.
Maybe ladies didn't blow their nose.
The
It's an
etiquette,
interesting
yeah.
one for listeners to email me. I never saw my mother blow her nose, but then I'm trying to think if I ever saw my father. They always had a hanky. We
Yeah,
always went
always.
out
Yeah,
with a
I agree with
hanky.
that. Yeah.
I suspect you're not a fan of the flu jab.
No, I'm not a fan of any jabs at all.
Because
Well, because I trust my body. I trust the innate wisdom of the innate intelligence of the body. And we have everything inside of us in order to be healthy, to express health, physically, chemically, and emotionally. And if we look at those aspects of our life, in other words, how we're thinking, what we're putting into our body, and how we're moving, then we would, or then we have a body that is able to respond to anything. But the flu jab is always, there's such a small percentage of each year it changes as to what strain it's going to be. And it's just a cocktail of, drugs put into a syringe in order to, create an illusion that someone is being protected. And for me, anything that's going to bypass where our immunity starts is not going to build immunity.
it's extraordinary thing, isn't it, that we used to all file up. I bet there's a big drop off this year. File up and get your flu jab, particularly if you're old, get your flu jab. Flu can kill. Michael Baker, flus can kill. And
Yeah.
I used to do it, and I was never comfortable doing it. Just, but I thought, oh, well, it was for the greater good. And never, a bit like my Marmite. But now, after that COVID experience, you couldn't get me near that flu jab stuff because it's what else is in there. No, to hell with
Well,
all that stuff.
I've never seen a child, beg their parents to, can I go and get an injection? Can I go and get an injection? In
No.
fact, the opposite is true, that every time you see a child at a a doctor's surgery or vaccination centers, wherever it is, you see them crying their eyes out and flinching and trying to get away from it. They know. And when you have young children, I just wrote about this in a recent blog, young children, because they don't have the command of the English language, they use their senses to sense the world. So they use their smell, smell, taste, vision, et cetera, majority of which is going to be sight and and smell when they go into something like a doctor's surgery. It doesn't smell right, doesn't look right. Therefore, I'm going to back myself and know it's not going to be appropriate for my body. And so you'll see the squirming and the pulling away and the wincing. And but we go again, you know, we go against that because we've been taught this illusion that health comes from, you know, the outside in, and there's a pill for every ill and there's an injection for every childhood challenge that may come along. And unfortunately, they're just cocktails upon cocktails upon cocktails. Now 72 different vaccines that a child will have in their lifetime to date. And it's like that just does not make sense.
Tell me, as we head into the colder months, should we adjust our diet? Or what we do, or supplements, or what do you do?
I think it's more the consistency of
if you're eating healthily, just stay eating healthily.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was on another interview the other day and they asked the same question, you know, should we do this? And I said, well, if you're eating consistently, you know, if you are making broths, if you are eating fermented foods, if you have probiotics, if you're having the, you know, minerals and magnesium, et cetera, which we can't get from soil. We spoke about it on our last episode, didn't we? And you're eating an organic diet and you're eating slowly, which I think Weston A. Price, or at least Sally Fallon, who runs the Weston A. Price Foundation, spoke about slow foods, so seasonal, local, organic, and whole foods. So if we always come from that acronym and move through the seasons according to that and eat what's available at that time, then in winter, traditionally, we will create more what I call health expressions. Other people may call that sickness, but as you remember, I coined that term health expression back in 2000 to replace the word sickness. So if we create more health expressions during winter purely because we're doing less and we don't have as much sunlight. So getting out, and even though it's cold and we're rugging up, but getting out and even if we're just sitting in the sun with our face in the sun and then we're and moving, then that's going to be important for, you know, our general health during this time as well. So, you know, the SLOW, looking at the acronym of SLOW, you know, seasonal, local, organic, whole foods, having the minerals, which we do, which is our colloidal minerals, and the magnesium. We have our vitamin C, the Camu Camu, and we probiotics and fermented foods and fish and, you know, broth. So it's making sure that there is that, you know, having the consistency of good food in your body that will help you through winter.
And that again is that 10,000 feet view or 50,000 feet view, and yeah, trusting your body.
Hmm.
And it's wonderful design.
Yeah, and your body, Rodney, will always have a seasonal sloughing. You know, there is that seasonal change, and that's okay. It's, you know, your body is constantly changing all the time. And so it makes sense that, you know, a couple of times a year, once a year, you know, maybe three times or more, you know, for different people, you will have a challenge to your system as you journey into the next season. And that's okay. That's natural. You know, that's a natural transition as we move through the year.
Part of me feels like a bear because my instinct in winter is to have a big meal and call up.
Did you say beer or beer?
A bear. I feel like a bear. No, a bear, B-E-A-R.
Right.
But I just want to crawl off to my little cave after a big meal and sleep the winter out, you know, because I just slow down in winter and the short days, and I just want to relax. And then spring comes and I sort of rub my eyes and it's ready to go again. And I've just learned to accept that. That's me.
And you know, again, if we look to animals within the wild, that's exactly what they do. Winter is a time of hibernation. It's a time of
And
different
regeneration, right?
foods and conserving energy and, you know, getting, you know, through that winter time. And we're no different as humans, even though we're working and we have access to different foods, etc. But it is a time of hibernation. It is a time of going within. It is a time of recouping and before we go into spring, and then we start to get a little bit more active, and then we're in summer, and then we're full on in, you know, in being outdoors. So there is that ebb and flow with the cycle of life, and I think that's a beautiful thing.
One thing that occurs to me that we should cover in a future episode is, could you cover for us, please, allergies?
Allergies. Okay.
A food allergies. Where does all that come from? You know, kids eat a peanut and die, and this is real. These
Well, I could,
shots.
yeah. We'll probably go to vaccinations then.
And then and hay fever and all those allergies that afflict people. Some stage we should cover that off. It was just occurring to me when you were talking about sneezing and coughing, and because I, for the first time in my life, last summer, got hay fever. And I thought I had a cold that I couldn't shake, and I had it for 3 weeks. Now, I might have done a terrible thing because I was feeling dreadful. I heard people complain about hay fever, and I thought, oh, yeah, you'll be right. It's just a sniffle. Man, I was crook. And then someone gave me a hay fever pill, and I popped it. I was good as gold in 20 minutes.
So
And,
what, yeah, and what happens with that is that we've, you know, like we've spoken about before, is that we've calmed the symptoms, the signs that our body was giving
yes, well,
us.
but not
And then
fixed it.
we've created that illusion that it's not there. But what's happened is that we've just moved it from one place in the body of an awareness to a different place. So it's not resolved. It hasn't gone. It's still there. It's still within to be activated again at some stage, because we haven't yet worked out physically, chemically, emotionally where actually
Let's
it was
do
coming
that.
from.
Let's do that on a session because it's not hay fever season. But I'd never experienced it, and I thought, my goodness! And I hate taking pills, and I took a few when it got really bad. And then they say, oh, some brands work and some don't, and I just gave up and just suffered through it in the finish. Let's do that now. Remind us, Vital Wellbeing, your webpage, please.
So it's vital or www.vital-wellbeing.com.
.com, vital-wellbeing.com. Search it up. Wonderful blogs there, wonderful information. It's absolutely a pleasure always here. And I mean, I feel great because I've never blown my nose. I'm incapable of it. I've tried. Because my mother said, blow your nose. And I'd try. And I actually physically couldn't do it. I don't know why. It just didn't. Maybe it was in a childhood awareness. And let's
Yeah,
just say
maybe.
I'm on the north side of my 60s and I still don't blow my nose.
Well, and isn't it great when we can look at the body from this innate perspective, you know, like it's the wisdom that it has if we start to peel away though, you know, our blinders and go, wow, actually that makes sense.
Yeah, but the Marmite, I fell down on the Marmite, my poor kids. There you
That's
go.
okay.
Give us a text at 2057. Email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. Thank you for listening. We're very, very blessed and no more blessed than we're so fortunate to have Dr. Sarah Farrant joining us from Vital Wellbeing. What a wonderful, wonderful woman. What wonderful wisdom we get shared with us.
Are you loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it, and right now they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.